you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in Geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl Kara Mahorn, Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Welcome back. Yes. Everyone.
Yes, here we are. Now it's a brand new year, a brand new day.
Time has begun again.
Yes, time begins.
I feel completely different. No, I do not.
Oh, I'm a whole different person. You can't see it.
Because you're a time lord.
Is that actually biologically true? No, our cells don't regenerate that quickly.
No, it takes a while.
Yeah.
No, but our cells do regenerate.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think over years, you're a completely different person.
Every 6 years. Or seven. Yeah. Seven
really?
Years.
You're a whole new person? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like every time I do a facial, I'm a whole new person.
How many times have you guys been new people?
I feel like every time I get a facial, I feel like I'm a new person.
Oh, agree. I just did a peel for the first time this winter, and it was very useful because I was feeling really old. And anyway, this has nothing to do with the news, and I can already see
Adam. Welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's anti-aging technique.
Yeah.
Brought to you by...
So well, there's like newsy stuff. There's a Bird Box just keeps staying in the news.
Bird Box just keeps making me laugh. It's a constant source of entertainment for me at this point.
Yeah, the Punisher is gonna get it. I guess that show's gonna come out. That's gonna happen.
Everything else got canceled, but it's coming.
And then there's Star Trek stuff and Doctor Who stuff and Gotham stuff. So many things to talk about.
I like to call it Gotham.
Got ham. I didn't get it the first time somebody said that to me.
Yeah.
And now I can't help but.
I mean, it's the
still
holidays.
Still not really.
It's just after
get
the
it.
Holidays.
It's not really the
so there's
joke.
Lots of leftover ham to begin with.
I mean, it depends on what home you're in. Anyway, so we'll talk about all those things. But first, as we do this thing at the top of every show where we talk about things that we're personally geeking out about. Adam.
Yes.
What you geeking out about?
We, over the holidays, acquired a NES Classic.
Ooh.
And so there has been much rejoicing and playing of old games and the realization that my hand-eye coordination and dexterity is not the same as it was when I was 11 or 12.
Terrible.
Yeah.
It's real bad.
We played Super Mario 3 and literally I was dead in 10 seconds. And this is not a challenging game on the first level. But it's just the controls. You know, these kids today don't realize how good they have it with these responsive controls and viewpoints you can change and all this different stuff.
In my day.
No, that really is one of the things that playing these old games drives home for you is that there was a lot less forgiveness for the player.
What else have you been playing? Because I have the Switch and the online thing keeps releasing new games, and I've been playing a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden. That was that was an old favorite.
The first
Ninja Gaiden. Gaiden, however you say it.
The
Punch-Out, which is no longer Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on the NES.
Oh, that's the one with Mr. Dream.
Expired. Yeah, but I only got so far before I had to quit.
What's the code?
I don't know.
I'm going to say it right now and then just listen back to the podcast later.
Yeah.
It's 007-373-5963.
That just takes you right to the end.
Why do you know that off the top of your head
when
from
I was
like
on the,
37 years ago?
When I was on the way home from school,
God.
I said to Greg Rogers, Greg, what's the code for Mike Tyson? And he said 007-373-5963. And I didn't have a pencil to write it down on at the time. So I just recited it over and over in my head on the walk home.
Right.
So this is like the McDonald's commercial that we all know.
Yes, exactly.
But for no reason, just because saying it over and over and over.
Yeah. And that's funny. I mean, that's just the funny thing, too, this is how you saved games back then. You entered a code, and it took you as far as you were. It's just so funny to revisit. I mean, it's fun revisiting the old titles, because a lot of the titles that are on there are really good. But it's more fun and interesting for me as a gamer to reflect on all the ways that gameplay and everything about it has changed over the past, whatever that was, 25, 30 years. So, yeah, and then now my big thing is researching how to hack my NES Classic. Not that I would ever recommend
how
that to anyone.
How dare you?
Oh, no, well, apparently, because all this is, from what I understand, is a Linux computer running... Yeah.
Very slowly. Oh, right. Well, that's true. It's emulating it.
Yeah, and yeah. So people have figured out a way where you can hack it. You plug it into your computer, you hack the platform, and then you can have 700 games out there. And there are several that are not included in the Classic that I really would love to play. Rygar, and that was a big game of mine from my childhood. What else? Gosh, I don't remember. But there's a lot of good stuff on there. There's Castlevania and Kid Icarus. Which I haven't played in a long time.
Which Castlevania? Like Symphony of Night? Or
I think Castlevania
is
a
regular
two,
Nintendo. Okay. So yeah. It's the first one, probably, and then Simon's Quest.
Yes. A couple of Zelda games. The first two Zeldas are on there. It's been fun.
But you get to play that straight, right? Because the thing about what I like about the Switch is that they have Zelda, and then they have a built-in hack so that you can start with, I think it's the second sword, and a couple of items, and I think maybe 6 or 7 hearts. It's great.
Why would you cheat like that?
Because
play the game. Just
I mean,
good.
Zelda, I can play through. I don't need it for that. But you know, they did the same thing for like Gradius. That one, they can start you with all of the upgrades. Mm-hmm. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
I wish they did that for the game I've been playing the most, Twin B. Which is really hard. I don't remember. I never played the first one because I don't think it came out in the United States, but I played the sequel, Stinger.
Mm-hmm.
And Stinger, I used to be able to play straight through, and I just, Twin B, man, I can only get to stage 2, and it's embarrassing.
I'm sorry.
My life is so hard.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And also ergonomic controllers. That's the other thing that you miss, or you didn't realize that you miss when you're playing with the old Nintendo. I used to remember, man, especially when Mike Tyson's Punch-Out came out.
Mm-hmm.
I get calluses on my fingers, really, and I would have cramps.
You had carpal tunnel before they called it carpal tunnel.
Yeah, because there was no one gave any F's as to the comfort of your hands when you're using the controllers.
Those are battle wounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Battle wounds.
Exactly.
Getting a blister on your finger from the button at
Gen
the arcade.
X grew up in that battle wounds are.
Of playing
I had
video
to
games.
Slam that AB button to get up.
It's true.
Anyway.
So that's it.
Yeah, cool. Enthused to talk about Nintendo games with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Karima?
I have been geeking out. First of all, it's the new year, so yay. Second, I've been geeking out about Young Justice, which came back today, but I'm not going to delve into that. We'll talk about that later. I've also been geeking out about a lot of the things that people, you know, there's every Marvel movie that's about to come out, or Star Wars, there's a rumor, or there's something that happens. Well, the rumor this week about a Marvel movie, which was hilarious, is that Hugh Jackman... People are speculating that he might return as Wolverine in Avengers Endgame. I don't think that's going to happen because he said, I'm not playing Wolverine. Although, he said, I'm not going to be in a Wolverine movie, which does not mean he couldn't be in an Avengers movie. But the reason why this rumor came to light is because either Google screwed this up or it's a real thing. If you, up until yesterday anyway, if you did a Google search under Hugh Jackman or Hugh Jackman movies... All of the movies that come up include Avengers Endgame,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because usually Marvel's really good with that. Like on IMDb, they're really good at like keeping people's names off. Like Sterling K. Brown wasn't listed until like a week before Black Panther. And then even then, they didn't say who he was playing. So, but it's just really funny because it's literally, I thought I might just see 1 or 2 articles, but it's been like Reddit things. And remember how like with the multiple endings of Black Mirror, how there were all these flowcharts and stuff, people were doing flowcharts trying to figure out who he could possibly be. Then somebody said he might be the voice of Deadpool. I'm like, then wait, why is Deadpool gonna be in Avengers Endgame? It was hilarious. So I actually have been geeking out over all of the rumors and the goofiness that fans basically make up and fill in the blanks for over this. So this week's rumor is Hugh Jackman's going to be in Endgame.
And sure he is.
I'm just tickled by it because of not so much the fact that it could or couldn't happen,
right.
but of the like literally
the galaxy brain efforts that people go through.
Is.
Yeah.
And it's also some of the, and some of it was happening like New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, because I'm like, okay, you're not at work. But then like, when it was like Wednesday, I'm like, wait a minute.
People were still on it. People,
yeah. It was pretty intense.
The heart wants what it wants. But I say Boulder Dash. I do not believe that it is for real.
And the only other little thing I'm geeking out about is I did get through the first episode of Young Justice on the train because DC Universe was late, and I was very happy to see Rocket because Rocket was one of my, when I was a kid,
nice.
Teenager, I should say, favorite characters. Rumors and Rocket.
Nice. Hey, Danny.
Hey, what?
What are you into this week?
See, the thing is, if I say the nerdy thing that I'm into, it's boring because it's LG announced that they're going to have HDMI 2.1 on their TVs starting this year, which people said was not going to happen. And I'm excited because it just means that there's a higher frame rate, which is great for gaming. And it also means that they're going to be able to do 60 frames per second for 8K TVs starting this year. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to go out and buy an 8K TV. It means that some things
I thought were going to take a little money on 8K TVs just yet.
But after a certain point, how many Ks do you really need?
I mean, there is an actual noticeable difference on, so you have to have, I think it's like 82 inches or more in order to actually be able to, for the human eye to notice the difference between 4K and 8K, but it does exist.
Right. I'm not upgrading until I can have a Tony Stark 10K wall and wake up and like I can turn the wall on.
Right.
Then here's the good news. We're getting closer to that because HDMI 2.1 technically you can do 10K with HDMI 2.1. It would be with a lowered frame rate, but it's possible. Anyway.
Well, it's one of those jokes like when people shoot like video their own videos, YouTube videos on red cameras at 8K, and you're like, but you're only showing it in 1080p.
Yeah.
Overkill.
It doesn't really. Anyway, that's a really nerdy thing, but I watched, did anybody see The Masked Singer? Anybody watch that?
No.
I did not. Somebody else was telling me about it.
You have to get
really
on that.
Is it really that good?
It's not that it's good. It's that it's so singularly bizarre.
No, but see, this is also going to sound bizarre. This is a Korean show that's exactly...
Yeah, that's what it's based... No, that's what it's based off
It's based on
of.
That one. Oh,
it's
okay.
It's based on a
because
Korean show.
Because I thought the Korean show was weird, because they would take basically... this is... You know, Adam, you know how you would watch the Great British Bake Off to calm down? I just watched random K-pop music shows to calm down. So... because even when they lose, no one's like trying to kill each other.
Yeah. So the pitch is they bring on a bunch
famous.
Of people, but you don't know who they are because they're all wearing big, weird costumes. And
yeah, if it's like Jean-Paul Gaultier,
they come in,
made these
they sing a song, and they have it's these two. So it's like two people sing a song, and then they decide which one's going to move forward. And then they'd have another two people sing a song, and they decide which one's going to move forward. And as they work it down, they decide, I think, every week, one person will take off their mask, and you'll find out who it was. And it's so...
But don't people have to guess?
Yes. There's a panel of judges. It is just a weird, silly, pointless show. And sometimes I need to decompress.
And so who was the Masked Singer?
It was a football player, so I don't remember.
Wow.
Oh, I thought they were all singers. Because that's what they
do
in the Korean
version.
No.
These are people from all different walks of life.
Oh, okay.
And the
Korean
football
version,
player had
all...
the best voice.
No, he lost.
Oh, he lost.
He was the first to lose.
Oh.
But he lost because he didn't know who was singing, or he was
no,
actually
No, he lost.
Singing.
He was singing. He sang a song.
Wow.
Oh, so yeah, there's basically, so the whole season is a pool of people. And
yeah, so you don't know who they are.
Eliminate that one after each week. Okay,
yeah,
I see.
And every week you find out who one of them was. But yeah, they're all different celebrities from different walks of life.
That's interesting.
It is dumb as hell. I like it.
No, that's what I'm saying. I and it's funny, I've watched the Korean version, and it's just as goofy.
Yeah, I kind of want to go back and watch that now. I'm kind of curious to see what.
Well,
what
the interesting thing is too, you can't have anybody whose voice is too distinctive.
Well,
otherwise...
no, here's what they. Well, I guess so. What it is,
they couldn't have Sia.
I mean, you
there,
put Bob Dylan on there, people are going to.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
This is what I'm saying. That's why, because people would say, "I think this is a singer," but I don't think that there's going to be a lot of singers in it. I think there are going to be a lot of people that are famous for something else that also have some basic aptitude to sing.
So like Elon Musk's mom is going to show up.
But I mean, do we know? I don't know Elon Musk's mom. But no, I mean, the football
she
player.
Models.
Was
a, I don't know if
just
she
because,
can sing.
Just because I don't know who the football player is doesn't mean he's not famous. It just means that I don't know anything about City Name sports team.
When you get out of here, though, Google Elon Musk's mom. She's like the living embodiment of Cruella de Vil.
Whoa. Goals. Anyway, That was, it's just so strange that I just kind of needed it because the world is stressful and it made me feel better. Anyway, so.
Okay, so I got two shows to watch.
Now we're all done with that. Let's talk about some newsy stuff. Karima, you really want to talk about the Zabura Box Challenge.
People describe seeing an entity that takes on the form of your worst fears.
Oh my God.
What are you looking at? What did you see? What is wrong with you? Please stop it.
Keep bringing this movie that I didn't like back into my life.
No. It's actually not about the movie.
I know.
The thing, everybody, and even if you didn't watch the movie, you'll know. Like by now, even if you are not going to watch this movie on Netflix, it's about an entity that if you see it, you go crazy. So people blindfold themselves. So somebody out there thought it'd be great to have a Bird Box challenge, and that is where you do things in your daily life. Like walk down the street, catch a bus, ride a bike, blindfolded. And Netflix had to get up on Twitter and go, listen, we never thought we'd have to say this, but do not participate in this challenge. We do not want you to hurt yourselves. That was not the goal of this movie. And it was just one of those, no, let people do it. I had a Darwin moment, like Darwin Awards. Anybody who does this deserves exactly what they get because it's stupid.
Yeah, but what if you drive with the blindfold on?
Well, no, even in the movie,
hit some, I don't know. I
mean, no, in the movie, they didn't drive with the blindfolds on. What they did, they blacked out the windows. And they did hit people. The people were already dead, but they did hit people. So what they're worrying about is people literally getting in cars and saying, hey, Netflix said I should do this. And Netflix is like, no, we saw that stupid challenge with you people dancing outside of a moving vehicle. We're going to ask you not to do that. So Darwin Awards, I thought it was like, oh, you know, you'll see stuff on social and you'll go, this is just happening in my neck of the woods. People aren't really doing this. But when like the actual company and the actors from the company are going, this is probably a dumb idea, people. Don't do this.
I mean, let's be honest. The whole challenge thing has really gotten out of control. Not everything needs a challenge, you know?
Yeah, life that's right. Get back to the good old days
life
with
is
ice
a challenge,
buckets.
Man.
Ice bucket. Yeah, exactly. That made sense to me. And actually did raise a lot of money for charity. But
great on a hot day.
People in this movie have a blindfold on, so we're going to put... No, that's not a thing.
I mean, you know what? Here's the thing. I want to do... Let's see. I'll do the Bird Box challenge if I'm someplace and somebody puts on the news. If I can also mute it. But I don't know what are things that I don't want to see. Subway Showtime. I'll do Bird Box challenge.
You said Subway Showtime. I'm done with you.
I love Subway Showtime.
No, and a lot of people do.
You can't be blindfolded, man, because you get kicked in the face that way. Nope. You need to be seen all the time.
I'm going to do the Bandersnatch challenge, which is just have someone follow me around all day telling me what to do.
Do you have to do it, though?
Yeah. That's the challenge. Oh. That should be the challenge. That's what people should
do. No, that's called going home in my house. I can't because that's my mother. That's just... In fact, that was the holidays. Can we move on to the next topic?
Whoa. Okay. All right.
I'm going to do the Avengers Infinity War challenge where I turn to dust and blow away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think if we just wait a little bit longer.
Exactly. It's just right around the corner.
Yeah. Did we watch the Punisher thing? There was a Punisher teaser.
I did watch it's really funny because they kind of dropped them both within 48 hours of each other. So I was like, is this the same one or the new one?
Someone told me once, life is just trying not to be lonely. It's like a bomb went off inside my mind.
And then the thing that got me with the new one is that Jigsaw, I'm like, okay, in the comics, Jigsaw got jacked up. His face was jacked up. I am mad.
This is a Mortal Engines situation all over again.
That's what I'm saying.
Wait, is that the name of the movie, right? I didn't make it up.
Mortal Engines is the name of the movie.
Yeah. Remember that where in the book her face is really jacked, but now she's just got some scars? The same thing.
Exactly. I'm like, why? How do we have sexy Jigsaw? What happened? Was that in his contract? Don't cut my face. Don't put a prosthetics on my face? Because I'm thinking, like, when he had a mask in the trailer and everything, and I'm like, oh, okay, so when he pulls the mask off, he's going to look like the Thing, you know? No. It's like, I have one scar that's strategically placed. I'm like, nah, man. That's, no.
That's not it.
That's not it. I need you to suffer.
Wow. Just now, like the one from, what is it, Punisher Warzone? He's the one that's from like 2008? Like,
yes.
Really jacked up.
You know, I don't think that's necessary. What if he fully embodies the character
and
gives a wonderful performance?
Soft.
No, he might, though. I mean, the actor is really good.
We can't get hung up on physical appearance differences.
No, I can't, because every time I look at him, I see Prince Caspian, and I need him to be cut up, so I stop seeing Prince Caspian.
I think you might be the only person who did anyone else see the Prince Caspian movie?
I saw it on like a Coast to Coast flight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I think he's safe from that particular association. In general,
he's too cute to be Jigsaw.
I guess I don't.
But I'm
glad that bless those people that made that Punisher show. Their show's going to come out, and then about 5 seconds later, it's going to be canceled.
Well, I was confused because I was like, okay, so let me get this straight. All of the other Netflix shows get canceled except for the one with the angry dude with the gun that's just destroying everything.
I just said they're done with it. Whatever. I still think that there's just something was happened behind the scenes with where it really just kind of came out. That there was no way that they were going to be able to afford or whatever it was. There's just not going to be any way to persist.
Well, I heard they wanted everybody to shorten their shows significantly, like only 9 or 10 episodes.
Oh, gosh, the horror.
Oh, sounds great.
Yeah.
But, I was going to say, that's a dream come true.
I want to see if that is what Punisher accepted, because Punisher got that news before they started shooting, I guess, but everybody else's, so scripts were already in play. And again, this is not verified information. This is just, again, just me talking to people in the business, but not like, I didn't have a conversation with the director of one of these shows.
Right.
Just my disclaimer.
Yeah. I just think the Punisher is going to come out and then it's going to get canceled. I think they'll put it out. And then after it's kind of done, whatever it's going to do, they'll just quietly say, and there won't be any more. And that's it.
Yeah, and I don't think Jessica Jones is coming back either, but they haven't announced it.
But I could see...
But they filmed... Wait, did they... whatever.
I would be... I would... Oh, I guess it depends, but I would be really surprised if this is the last time you see John Bernthal as the Punisher.
No.
I'm assuming Marvel will have the ability... I don't know the legal...
I think there's a movie coming.
...ramifications, but yeah, I would imagine... His portrayal of the character is so popular, I don't know that... They're going to just walk away from that entirely. And also, given that it's probably, I would say, one of the cheaper shows of their original bunch to produce, because it's not as effects heavy. It's more grounded.
And everybody just gets a day rate because everybody does.
Yeah, there you go.
There's no residuals. You just show up, get shot, and go home.
Mike Coulter thinks that eventually it'll get worked out. I think Mike Coulter is dreaming.
Yeah, I don't have time to talk about Mike Coulter. Mike Coulter does not live on the same planet as the rest of us sometimes.
Yeah, definitely not when he thought that.
You gotta look at his Instagram occasionally. It's like, wow.
Anyway, so that's, Punisher. It's happening. So we're going to talk about a bunch of TV shows. But before we do that, listen to this lovely advertisement.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That was a lovely advertisement.
It was so great.
It was fabulous.
Life-changing.
Yeah.
I feel better about myself now.
So what do we got? You want to do Star Trek?
Yep.
Okay. So the new season is going to be coming out pretty soon.
Yes.
Just a scant few weeks away. And in the meantime, what they've been doing for the last 4 months now is they put out a Short Treks episode. And the last one aired today.
Yeah.
Well, last night. And it was about old Harry Mudd.
It was.
As now portrayed by Rainn Wilson.
How dare you? How dare you put your hands on me, you filth!
Wanted for 30 counts of smuggling.
I'm a bad, bad man.
Maybe I have been falsely accused once or twice.
I really, really like these shorts. And I was actually saying to somebody very recently that I miss the Marvel shorts. Remember the Marvel shorts that used to come out after movies?
Yeah.
And like sort of, I wish... Those got turned into shows. And no, don't say S.H.I.E.L.D. But these reminded me of that. And it was also a chance I felt for some of these actors to flex. I had watched the first one. There's four. I'd watched the first one with Ensign Tilly a while ago, but I hadn't seen the other ones. And then I sat down and watched all of them together, which made a nice hour of programming last night. I don't think this fourth one was my favorite, but it was so Harry Mudd.
I liked all of them.
It was so him.
Rainn Wilson is great. They got one of the writers from Rick and Morty.
Clearly.
That comes through.
There was definitely some Rick and Morty timing in there.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And I do. I agree with you. So I realized that this was coming out, and I had been kind of putting off watching these. And I said, well, I mean, we're so close. And I had just, for a project that I had to work on, I had just rewatched the entire first season of Discovery and found that I liked it way more the second time. Just because, you know what it is? It's that, for me at least, the first time I watched Discovery, I was still in my head thinking, you know, the stuff that I grew up on, Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. And so it was still hard for me to get over how different it is, because it is, you know, a buddy of mine said there are, you know, two or three actual episodes of Star Trek in there. And you know, that's like, you know, that's like when the new boss comes in, you say, who is this guy? And you go, he's your boss. So you better get used to it. But yeah, I mean, it's a very different Star Trek when you compare it to those things. There are a couple episodes that do have that vibe for sure. But on the whole, to have something that is a journey, you know, that whole first season, having rewatched it now, it's really about Michael Burnham's journey more so than anything else. Like, there are other great characters, but you're really talking about a woman who made a mistake and then had all the stuff laid on her. Like, the Klingons weren't about to go to war with people anyway, but everybody want to act like it was her fault the whole way through, gaslight her a whole season long. And to go from that beginning point to have her confront a lot of stuff, not just that, but like the truth about what was happening with Sarek, who had chosen Spock over her and was carrying all this guilt and pretending like nothing was wrong, gaslit her all over again, to get through all that stuff and then to end that season with putting the badge back on her and then her give the speech and the big smile is so earned. It's such a beautiful moment. I actually realized upon rewatching it that I think maybe it's the best performance of the whole year on television for me. I don't know if I saw anything better. It really blew me away.
I think we all had our reservations about the service, the streaming service and everything.
Yeah.
And I, for one, was very vocal about the fact that I still have to watch commercials, even though I'm paying for this. But I do think some of that freedom was meant consistency of in writing. Even when I looked at the credits, I was seeing a lot of the same directors and a lot of the same to the narrative, that because they had the money and they weren't fighting, I guess, with a board or anything, they were able to stay consistent, even the way it was shot. Because you know how sometimes with shows, you know, they bring in the A-team for the premiere, and at the end, on the season finale, they also have the A-team on everything. Yeah. But everything in between looks like, who colored this?
I will say this.
Whose fight coordinator was this?
It was. I had to get used to the short treks.
Yeah.
Because the first one I watched was the one with Tilly.
Yes.
And I said, somebody else is doing her hair.
Yes.
I really noticed it.
Yes.
I really caught
B-team.
That. I mean, it was great. But the thing that I like about the short treks is that they are, instead of being part of this big, long story, they, in that way, those things felt a little more like Star Trek to me of the classic variety, because every single thing was a very different flavor. It was a very singular story. So, yes, you get one that's a story about this this stowaway who ends up being more than she seems. And
yeah, which was beautifully, beautifully done. And I think Tilly is always, to me, the most real character on the show, because she's always like, why? Why would we do this? Like, using like vernacular that we use now, which throws some people off, but I love it. And
they dropped a Buffy character in Star Trek is what they did with
That's
her.
Exactly what they did. And this short trek with her was a caffeinated Buffy character.
She's great.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, otherwise known as a Gilmore Girl. Got it. I mean, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed, there's an episode where a guy winds up on the Discovery, but it's a thousand years later.
Yeah, it's Aldous Hodge. And this is the only episode of all of these that made me cry. Like, at the end, I was like, all right, I need tissues. But it was fantastic because there's so many questions. You're clearly on the same ship, but it's a thousand years in the future. The AI has clearly advanced.
Oh, yeah, evolved.
Evolved. And so much so that she's lonely. And the relationship that these two form. You know what's really weird when I think about it? Every single Trek is kind of about a stowaway.
Yeah.
I just thought about that. It's got a stowaway theme. Not to give anything away. Please watch them because they're very good. And the one with, and then, of course, Saru's.
Oh, yeah, Saru's story is great.
Origin story was fantastic.
It's the one that really ties most to what we've already seen. But that's great. If you wanted to know where Saru comes from, if you want to know why he's a part of Starfleet, what his racist backstory is, it's interesting. I watched it, and of all of them, it was the one that I said, wow. People are going to come back to this.
Doug Jones is such an underrated actor, too.
I mean, I mean, everybody is so great on that show, but yeah, he's really tremendous, and I hope that they give him more. Now that we kind of got the full Michael Burnham story, and I mean, Snook Martin Green is incredible, but I do hope that they'll continue to sort of explore the show as more of a whole, and so we'll get more Saru stuff. I mean, there was a whole thing where they went to the Mirror Universe where he asked if there were any Kelpians. And now I feel like we got a better understanding of why it is that he asked that question.
Yes, he did. Yep.
And so that's great. And yeah, and the Harry Mudd episode
and the fact
is
that they were Kelpians
goof.
And they were collecting kelp. I literally thought that it was a whole other reason for their name. And I'm like, they're harvesting kelp. That is why they're called the Kelpians.
Got them. But yeah, and the Harry Mudd episode is just funny. It's just funny and goofy and
so very Harry Mudd. Star Trek fans are going to love it.
Yeah, they do. They make a pretty specific reference back to the classic series.
I literally expected Q to show up in that.
Oh, man. I would love John DeLancey to show up in something.
That would have been
amazing. Anyway, yeah. I mean, I put it off and put it off and put it off, and then I finally watched it, and I would say two enthusiastic thumbs up. Highly recommend, and I'm excited for season two now.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for season two.
So that happened, and then there's Gotham. And Gotham is in its last season, so they aired the first episode.
Out of this blood and fire will rise the Dark Knight that your city needs.
Gotham is not your responsibility.
I'm making it mine.
This week, it's season five. They're doing this no man's land plotline where all of Gotham is cut off. They blew up all the bridges. Government is not helping them out. They're not sending any kind of relief. The episode, they do a flash forward. To sort of give you an idea of where things are going to ultimately wind up. But then they give you, it's still, when you start the story proper, it's still, I think, 86 days that they've been in the no man's land situation.
Right. Even though that opening scene was in the future, it's seeing all those fully realized characters when they were coming down that hall. I have to go back and figure out what cover this was, but it was, there's an iconic cover with everybody, Riddler, Penguin, walking towards with weapons, and that dark hallway shot, I was like, oh my God. It just was really iconic, and it was also interesting to see after five seasons where all these characters.
It is. So I've been talking to a number of the actors, and I talked to the costume designer, which there'll be an article about that later. But this week in particular, I talked to David and Cameron, who play Bruce and Selina.
Mm-hmm.
And
have grown up on this show. Basically.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, they're, you know, David's about to turn 18. That was a gas. You know, you won't hear this. I'll give you a little glimpse of some of the stuff we talked about. But a thing that we cut out of the audio recording was I kept going, the audio is weird. Like, he keeps cutting in and out. And the reason was because he was on the road. And where was he on the road to? School.
Aww.
His mom got on the phone. He was like, he's got to go to school. I was like, this is crazy. This is such a weird...
That's interesting. I thought he was
I've
tutored.
I've never had that...
No, I literally thought he was tutored. I didn't know he was physically going to school.
Well, he was working on the show, but he's done with the show now.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I mean, like, I don't hope I'm not, like, blowing up his spot with this information, but, like,
well,
you know...
Well, everybody knows his age.
I mean, yeah, but he's, you know, he's
turning...
He's
going to prom. He can't talk
yeah,
right now.
There you go. But it was that was funny, you know, and Cameron was in her family's house in San Diego and had her phone plugged in. And, you know, it's just funny talking to people who are younger that are, you know, like have worked hard but are still figuring all that stuff out. You know, she's like a dog, like come up like trying to bug her while we're on the interview.
Aww.
You'll hear very quickly, we're just going to drop in two sort of brief questions, two things that I talked about, one with David and one with Cameron, and we'll put that in right here. Do you find that there's more of you in Bruce in this last season than in seasons before? Do you feel like now that the show is over and you're sort of moving on to the project, is there sort of a bit of Bruce that is a part of you forever now? And if so, what parts do you feel like those are?
Extremely spot on when you say that. It's a two-way street. It absolutely is a two-way street. I would say it's probably, you know, good year of time that I've spent in Bruce's body. And that doesn't just go away overnight, obviously. He is absolutely a part of me. He is absolutely ingrained in my soul. Sounds very dramatic, but I felt like I wanted to say it. That was the only thing that was really hitting me kind of the hardest. It was just the fact that I'm not going to be Bruce anymore. I think, if anything, going into season 5, on the flip side, there was less of me in Bruce. I think Bruce is getting ever closer to, he obviously is getting ever closer, especially in season 5, to becoming Batman and to kind of having that indomitable work ethic, an immensity of strength, this stoic attitude that's become so famous over the years in the Batman mythos. And I think combined, taken as a whole, it's not exactly me. I'm not like that in real life. So I think there was less of me in Bruce. There will always be a part of me that is Bruce.
Physical aspect of Selena was a really big deal to me this year. And wardrobe got it without me even having to say it. I really wanted to show visually what Selena was going through. And you don't see it at all, really, during the last season because I had my jacket on. But I had a corset underneath, and instead of doing a zipper in the back, we did a lace-up because the plan was to have my jacket off at some point. And it was to show, kind of act as a back brace for her, and how and her jeans were she had leggings on because I wanted to be able to move more, but her gloves were a little bit more worn, and we wanted to show a little bit more practicality in the costume this season, especially given the fact that the people of Gotham were practically living through Armageddon. We didn't really do anything different with her hair. We just kind of let it be curly, naturally curly, because I didn't really care about her hair this season. The makeup was a legitimate collaborative effort. I told Sarah that I wanted a graphic liner. We wanted a twist on the cat eye, but I definitely wanted a graphic liner. And so she used both gel liner and eyeshadow, so that it could have that duality of hard and soft. We did a nude lip because I didn't want her look to be very bold and out there. I wanted it to still be subtle and still kind of keep that somewhat of a natural look. Yeah, her physical look, Selena's physical look this year, was all about practicality and simplicity, but obvious changes where the world is kind of working against Selena, so she was a little different. And I think that as a team, everybody really accomplished that.
So, and then if you want to hear the rest of those, we're going to put the two together as kind of like a bonus episode. And then you can kind of hear all the other stuff that we talked about.
That's awesome. It's always good to, it's always fun when you get to hear the actors that are playing these roles, what their take is on what we have all these theories and ideas and concepts, and we're coming to it from the fan side and the comics and stuff like that. But it's always interesting to hear them, because they weren't even born when the comics, came out. So it's interesting to hear their takes on their development of their characters.
The two of them are very different too, because David was very intent upon researching a lot of other people's approaches. And one of the things that Cameron and I talked about was that she never felt like she had it. You know what I mean? Like, she never, like, she's aware of the other people, but even by the end, she said, I never really played Catwoman, and I never was playing it that way. That was, she was more about, I want to find the emotion that I need in the moment. And so it was interesting to sort of see their different approaches. I mean, they're, I think, two, especially the, one's about to turn 18, and I think the other one is 18 and going on 19 or whatever, like, I would not have the growth of the wherewithal to be able to do what the two of them have done. And they really stand just as tall as the other people on the show. And it's been interesting watching it. And I thought it was a really great start to season 5. They,
I like Riddler's development. I like the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Oh, yeah. They've done that in the past, but this is sort of a new side of the die.
Yeah, I feel like it's more intense.
Yeah.
And I just think it's hilarious because his sort of Dr. Hyde side is just leaving him wherever.
Yeah. So if you, all right. So if you haven't watched it yet, you can like fast forward a minute or two, but there's one thing that happened that was pretty big, which is that they kill the character off.
Yeah. I felt some kind of way about that. But.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is you, I'll put it to you this way. You certainly were not alone. And by that, I mean, when I was at the Paley Center and they aired that episode, afterwards, I talked to Aaron Richards, who plays Barbara Keene. Mm-hmm. And the character they killed off is a character named Tabitha Galvan. Jessica, who plays that part, and Aaron have been their scene partners. You know, most of what they have done for the last 2 or 3 years especially have been the two of them.
They have a relationship,
and so for Aaron to not have that person who is usually the person that she's doing scenes with
not
for the last
that,
11 episodes.
Not just that, Tabitha's Tigress. So I thought we were going to see Tabitha, is her character's name is Tigress.
Well, they can,
the
I mean, in reality, I mean, in the Gotham universe, they can always bring somebody back. So for all I know,
they can.
They
but
will,
I just was
but it,
like,
I mean,
that's a pretty big person to take out.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, I never, the, in my mind, I view Gotham as something that's so completely
separate.
Different. It never was designed to sort of match up entirely. I know that when they get to the end of it, they're going to put Robin in a fat suit to play a larger version of Penguin. And
oh, really?
And there's some stuff I keep asking. I'm like, are you sure it's okay that we? But you'll hear more of this in the costumers interview, which will be a print interview. But we talked about the Batman suit a little bit, and certain requirements that they had for that. But yeah, I mean, like you'll see David Mazouz in a Batman suit.
Batman.
He will be Batman at some point. So yeah, I mean, I'm jazzed about it. I really like the first episode. I've seen the second and the third episode. So, you know, to give you a glimpse there, you know, you're going to see Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. You're going to get a sense of where Poison Ivy fits into this world. And yeah, it's just you're going to really see how Bruce Wayne works with the GCPD in a way that he never has before, sort of really setting up like the kind of Batman Jim Gordon dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, it's great. I love Gotham, and it's been really gratifying getting a chance to talk to a lot of these people as we go into the fifth season.
It is, and the one little piece of trivia that I didn't know till this week, which you probably already knew, I'm looking at the credits and I'm going, Alfred Pertwee, where do I know that name? I did not realize that the guy that plays Alfred on the show is the son of the third Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I did not get that until this weekend.
Yeah.
I was unaware.
You should look it up.
I'm seeing his name and I'm going, I know this. And then the moment I Googled it, I was like, oh my God.
Did you see
the drunk doctor?
Did you see the picture of him? There's a picture of him dressed as his dad.
Oh no, I have to find that. Okay.
It's cool. It's very, yeah, he does like this very John Pertwee third doctor pose. But yeah, no, Sean Pertwee is incredible. That was the guy every single person you talk to that works on Gotham says the same thing. That Sean Pertwee is their best friend and they you know, he's just the greatest person. They all learn so much from him that he's just this really sweet, genuine guy. I've only talked to him a little bit, but yeah, like he's got a really chill attitude and he really knows what he's doing. Anyway, so that's Gotham, and now we get to what I knew was going to be the tentpole topic from the start, and that is Doctor Who aired its New Year's Eve episode.
Yep.
Or New Year's Day episode resolution, and gosh, I wish that I could say that the news cycle had been people talking about the episode. That did not happen. Adam, you and I, who watched it, should talk about it, but then we'll talk about the non-actual episode things that kind of dominated the news sphere.
This is the DNA of the most dangerous creature in the universe.
What?
It's been buried on Earth since the 9th century.
Run!
It's not going to stop until it's taken control of this planet. It's going to kill anyone that gets in its path.
What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it very much. I think it might be my favorite episode with Jodie Whittaker so far.
Hmm.
And obviously, I mean, spoilers, this is going to be spoilers.
Right.
You have to spoil it to even talk about it.
Because, yeah, for sure.
You know, we had all this stuff reading through the season about how classic villains aren't going to show up. And, you know, I liked that on some level, but man, when they bring the Daleks back in, it's always, it's it's a moment, I think, for every doctor to have their first encounter with the Daleks. And this was a good one, I thought. They did some interesting different things with the Daleks. And that's the thing I always say is, like, up to a certain point, there's only so much you can do. I keep feeling like there's only so much you can do with these particular characters, but they found some new territory to mine, some very uncomfortable territory for me personally. And yeah, I dug it.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's my favorite of the Jodie Whittaker episodes. It's up there. Yeah. I think so. All right. My take. Well, you know, let's sort of break it down just so people know what it is, basically. Yeah. There is a 9th century Dalek that was separated into three parts, and a archaeological group finds one part, and then that part kind of wakes up and is able to rejoin with the other two parts. And the Dalek attaches itself to this woman archaeologist and uses her like a puppet.
Yeah.
In order to
body her in
order to rebuild itself, get a good old fashioned Dalek gun, and then go on the attack against the Doctor and against the human race. And the Doctor does face one particular challenge, which is that she's kind of alone in this. Instead of having UNIT to rely on, you know, right. she tries to, that was my favorite part of the whole episode.
Yeah.
Reaches out, trying to get in touch with UNIT, gets put on hold, and then has kind of a really classic interaction with a call center person. And you know, wouldn't you know it, Brexit.
Yep.
Budget cuts, no more UNIT.
Oh, wow.
What a gas. I know that made some people mad, but that I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, you know, the Dalek basically creates its own shell, and yeah, there's a big face off, and surprise, surprise, you know, the Doctor wins.
Amazing.
What a shock.
Yes.
that would happen. I thought, I loved the design of the Dalek. I think it's kind of interesting. I had mixed feelings about the whole Puppet Master kind of thing. At first, I said, wouldn't it have been cool if they had gotten a person who was really angry and liked being dominated by the Dalek because it got to go off and kill people and stuff, kind of like a Venom situation,
right,
almost.
Right, right.
That could have been like, I kept thinking, oh man, Venom, but a Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's great.
Daddy
Dalek.
I could see that being a future plot of an episode.
They should try that.
They often develop
free advice from me to you, yeah. BBC.
I mean, we all thought the Weeping Angels were going to be a one-off, and suddenly, you know, the Statue of Liberty. So
yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. So the thing about it is that I watched it, and I wondered, and I don't have the answer to this, how much time had passed between when this episode was scripted versus the others, because I don't think it was that far out. I think it was part of ultimately the same block of filming. But was there any pushback, I wonder? Someone saying, hey, can we have something that, if it's going to air on a different day, can it sort of be like how the old show is, where it's a little more bombastic?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, is this is the episode that felt the most like the Russell T. Davies, Stephen Moffat era, that previous 12 years that we'd had. And in some ways, I liked that. But the one critique I had is that the guy that does the music, I don't think that this big, loud, bombastic stuff is to his style. It really stuck out to me that it felt like they were trying to sort of do stuff that was more like Murray Gold. And I really love the soundtrack. I like the 13th Doctor's theme. I really love the take on the Doctor Who theme from Demons of the Punjab. I thought there's some really standout music. And this, for me, wasn't it. It felt like they were trying to throw back. It was one of the things that really stood out to me that I didn't like. That's a personal taste, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, on the whole, it was sort of interesting to see Chris Chibnall on that team try to do something that feels a little bit with bigger stakes and a little more of what the last 12 years of the show had been. I'm sure that there are some things that they'll learn from it, and I liked it. I certainly didn't dislike it. I have enjoyed the experimenting, and I'm excited, and I hope that they don't throw away some of the experimentation that they did with season 11, is my take.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of, it feels comfortable when the Dalek shows up and you get that vibe that you got for those of us, especially who have, you know, only watched the 2005 and on Doctor Who. It's like putting on a comfy old sweater. You know? It's like, oh, this is that feeling. I remember that feeling that I had. And so I certainly am wary of falling into that trap entirely, but I thought it was a lot of fun. And I mean, the body horror stuff, really, I was impressed with and kind of.
Well, that's the thing that I liked most. Yeah. I thought the Dalek was scarier than maybe the Daleks have been since the episode Dalek, that first one back with Chris Eccleston, where, you know, and they even kind of reference it a little bit because the doctors have had some experience.
You find out where they actually come from.
I've had some experience thinking like a Dalek.
Right.
And that's, I think, really stretches back to that moment where the Daleks, as you would make a good Dalek, is great. And I just genuinely, every time they've shown up since, it's not that they haven't been entertaining, it's just that there's always a lot of them, or, you know, there's a human Dalek that's got a weird tentacle face and whatever it is that they, you know, they've done a lot of things with the Daleks where they're fun, they're interesting, they have a certain degree of menace. But that first episode with Chris Eccleston was so good. And I don't think since then, until this episode, have I thought they felt substantial, dangerous.
Yeah.
It's cool when there's just one.
Right.
I love that. Yeah. I think one Dalek and realizing how powerful one on its own can be is just way more interesting than an army of thousands or even millions of them, because you know that they're going to win anyway. So,
and that was the crazy. And the Daleks got their, you know, Darth Vader in Rogue One scene in this episode where the army platoon or whatever confronts him and he just wipes them out. Like, yeah, that was intense. See, that was a scene where they set it up and I kept expecting the TARDIS to materialize before anything really went down. And then,
I really give it to same thing, sound team. Sound design on that, there was something like heavy and kind of chunky to what they were bringing, and it just really worked for me. He just sounded more dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if that sort of plays into how they've sort of brought a different look to the show this year, but man, it struck a chord with me. I thought it worked great.
Yeah.
So,
I found the B story.
Oh, the stuff with Ryan's dad.
Yeah. I found that really emotionally deep and interesting, and especially the scene with Ryan and his dad where they're kind of in the cafe and Ryan tells him, "This is everything I need you to tell me." And then the father, and then he can't, like, he just says something different. I mean, it's just, it didn't feel easy. It didn't feel cheap. And
so here's the thing. I like that the doctor was pretty forthright when Ryan's dad comes in and says, you didn't show up to the funeral. You let him down. But just as valid is that moment, the one moment that you're talking about wherein Ryan's dad says, you know, sometimes you want to do the right thing and you mess up, and the reality is that you have to move forward, you know, and
he's everybody's dad this season.
And the thing is, the other thing about it is that, you know, there is a moment where Graham says, "Why didn't you come?" And he says, "I thought if I wasn't there, she wouldn't really be dead."
Yeah.
I absolutely accept that. I thought, you know, and we'll talk about this more in a minute, but I've seen people say that they feel like this is playing into a bad dad trope, but I don't think he's a bad dad. I think he's a complicated guy.
Right.
And I think in this particular case, he really struggled, and we don't know what his other struggles were, but he does show up in this episode and he is absolutely essential to them fighting the Dalek.
Right. Well, and I would say, I think that the way they handled it was very not tropey.
No,
There are so many ways that story could have gone that would have felt pat and cliched. And this, I felt, was a much more complex exploration, like you said, of the motivations behind some of these decisions and everything than I expected to get. So,
yeah. So, and in lieu of that, that's one thing that I wanted to talk about. So, speaking of tropes, I don't know if you caught this, but so the woman who is being controlled by the Dalek, she goes to get that Dalek gun, and there's a guard there that's sort of protecting the black site, and he says in passing that he's gay. He makes a point of his partner and then dies. People on the internet decided that this was Bury Your Gays. It is not. Demonstrably, the Dalek kills a lot of people.
Right.
In this episode,
he's not the only the gay is not the only one to die.
The thing about it is that, you know, this is a real pick and choose your battle, in my opinion. This is, you know, I don't want to say like this is a fact. To me, hearing people freak out about this and say this is Bury Your Gays is different than saying, well, Chris Chibnall and Matt Streven said that there were going to be a lot of gay characters and we didn't see that. That's a different conversation than Bury Your Gays. Bury Your Gays is a different animal. And there, I've talked about it plenty. I've written articles on this topic. Take it from me. This random character getting killed off in 2 seconds, along with all the other people that got killed off by the Dalek, is not the thing to fight about. Saying, hey, y'all said that there were going to be some LGBT characters and we felt like there weren't really enough of them. That conversation, have at it. I think that's a useful, productive conversation. But this is sort of, you know, we talk about toxic fandom, and I rail against that because I don't actually think fandom as a whole is toxic, but sometimes things happen that can be toxic. There's been a lot of that this week.
I think toxic people can make up certain portions of fandom.
There's
I'm right in the middle on that one.
A metric shit ton of stuff that came out this week, and all of it is, so one thing that happened, and I would love for this to just end. People said, this episode only got watched by 5.15 million people, and compare that with the 12 plus million people that watched Voyage of the Damned. Okay.
Well, one of the problems.
But what is that? Let's address it. Let's address this.
No,
so,
but I don't think it's actually about the show so much, and more it's about technical. I'll put it to you this way. I had trouble watching the show because I physically paid for an entire season of Doctor Who and could not get this episode.
And right, you mentioned this.
And I've mentioned before that I've unplugged. I'm not off cable, but I'm doing everything streaming. Every single streaming service I owned wouldn't carry it. So I literally couldn't watch it, even online. And I said, all right, well, many times when I missed stuff, you can watch them the next day.
And that's
like
also
later.
But that's also a different number too, which hasn't been tallied yet.
Exactly. But I think a lot
They're
of people
are still talking about TV stuff and DVR.
Well, that for DVR for the actual from the
right
the
so they haven't the number that you're talking about
for this streaming thing
that
show?
Hasn't even been counted yet. That information is not, that takes over a week before they actually calculate and say this is what the number is. So that is one thing. And if you look at the difference between Voyage of the Damned came out in 2007-2008,
yeah,
and this came out in 2019, folks, the way people watch things has changed a lot in the last decade. You know, did people watch stuff online?
Nielsen mattered more then.
10 years ago, yes, but they didn't watch things online to the same degree that they do now. There are a lot of people cutting cords. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is there is a difference between Christmas Day and New Year's Day.
That is correct.
That's another thing. And all of this is to one particular point, which is, why are people talking about this, right? I don't care about this because I'm not in a board meeting having to justify viewing numbers. That's not my job. The reason people talk about this stuff is because they think it somehow proves a point.
Right.
Thing good, thing bad. Ratings don't make a thing good or bad. They're just people liked it, people didn't like it. Like a thing, don't like a thing. This is the stuff that's weird to me. That was one conversation. And then there's another thing, and if you want to weigh in on this, anybody, please, because I'll talk forever, is that this was continued the concept of, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, that episode resolution has a 100% score based on, I think it's 17 or 18 critic reviews, and it has something like a 17% user rating based on 902. And this is the other conversation that keeps coming up, which is critics are out of touch. Critics are liars. Critics are on the take. I don't, and this is, you know, and it's the conversation is, again, I feel ultimately about, you know, trying to prove thing good versus thing bad. But I do take this pretty seriously as a person that, you know, sits and talks about things and criticizes things and interviews people and does all the things that I do. When somebody rolls in and says, like, you're lying, you didn't really like the thing, or you only like the thing because the doctor's a woman, you're shilling to the SJWs.
Well, that's a Tuesday on the internet. But in terms of those numbers, not necessarily the public, the numbers and the numbers of critics and things like that are only one part of the equation, I think, of what keeps the show on the air. As we've seen with certain shows that have left this network, it's not all one thing. So I would not put too much stock into that. The usual battle with social media is always going to be, oh, you're just saying you like it because of this.
For me, this is cumulative, though, right? Because it's not, it's like anything, right?
Well, and, okay,
So for me, I look at it and I say, this is not the first time I heard it, but 2018 was a big year of this, right? It happened with Star Wars, The Last Jedi. It did happen with Star Trek to a degree. And now it has happened throughout the season with Doctor Who, and now, you know, into 2019 with this episode. It's continuing. So this is a conversation. This is a big conversation, which is the disparity between professional critics and fans. And my struggle with it is big. I mean, and it has layers, but for me, you know, like, you ever watch something on YouTube? We go to YouTube and no, not you.
Never watched anything on YouTube.
So here's a thing that happens.
I watch things on YouTube, but I don't read the comments on YouTube.
Here's the thing that happens to me is that, YouTube loves to recommend things to me that will make me angry all the time. And the thing is, if it does it over and over again, eventually I'll watch it. They'll just push it until I watch.
You know, you can say, I don't like this recommendation. And
I know, but they'll keep finding another one and another one and another one.
You can't blame YouTube for that. That is the goal of YouTube. The whole purpose is to make you stay there to watch more things because they can sell you things through advertising.
I'm not mad about it. In fact, it's not, you know, because it's not even, ultimately, it's not bad for me, mm-hmm. I don't think. Because, you know, if I watch people with other points of view, it's fine. But by chance, what I happened to come upon was one particular guy who kept doing, he's made like 20 videos about how much he hates Doctor Who. Fine. It's okay. You can hate Doctor Who. Here is the thing that sort of got to me. He started going through the reviews and he would name the names of people who wrote the reviews. And then he would quote the reviews using a funny kind of mean-spirited voice and then accuse these people of being liars or, you know, or shilling or being on the take or whatever. Now, everything before that is fine. In the era of fake news, where journalists are under threat, this has a consequence. Mm-hmm. And the consequence is not to this guy, but it is to the people that he's naming. Because, you know, tens of thousands of people are going to watch his video. And they're watching his video because they like this. They want to get up and angry about a thing, which is an aspect of human society. But, you know, I kept watching the videos over and over again. And at first it was just... because I was annoyed that he didn't like Doctor Who, and I was like, this is childish. Like, this is just, it's just as childish for me to be mad that he doesn't like a thing as I think the reasons are that he's mad about it. But the moment that you start saying names of people and start making huge suppositions about those people, this is, I think, all of this was leading up to, could we stop doing this? This is all I ask. Like, here's all I am saying. If you see somebody likes a thing and you go, I just don't understand how you could like that. Don't seek out a conspiracy.
Right.
Because it's not there. People aren't that smart.
Well, I mean, listen, and I think the thing that people need to realize is that I've been accused as a reviewer of not being objective about some things, and the answer is you're right.
Of course not.
All a critic is doing is offering their personal opinion, and everybody's got one, and, you know, it's informed by whatever it's informed by. For a critic who's steeped in film history, it can be informed by that. If you're just a giant Aquaman fan and you loved Aquaman, like, that informs what your opinion on it is. So, at the end of the day, it's just somebody who has a job, gets to post their opinions, but doesn't mean anything. Like, and that's the thing, too, is I understand there's some defensiveness because people think if there are bad reviews, then thing won't do well. And if thing doesn't do well, they won't get more of thing. And that is just not the case anymore. I mean,
no,
there,
it isn't.
There are
that's
so
not...
many movies that come out, so many shows that come out that get savaged critically and make a ton of... I mean, we're getting a Suicide Squad 2, and that movie could not have been beaten up more by critics. And it did great. And so now we're getting Suicide Squad 2. So we are not in that time anymore where... if your science fiction or fantasy film of choice doesn't get good reviews, it's doomed. Because there's so much... first of all, everybody has a megaphone, so word of mouth can spread in a lot of different ways. And it all depends on how well go see it. Go see it and support it. Get your friends to go see it, and maybe it'll work out. Like, I just... this idea that reviews are... and critics are on some other thing, you know? We're just people who have opinions... and they may be different than yours, and that's okay.
Here's the thing. I'm middle of the road with it. I don't do as many reviews as I used to because I've been threatened that people have not used my real name, but I've had, there's an entire podcast out there where they literally had entire podcasts dedicated to me and everything that's wrong with me. So there's, I mean, it's unfortunately when people feel they own a lot of these fictional characters, and I'm at least old enough and aware enough to go, okay, there's something not right with these people that think that something that I have said on my blog or whatever is going to take down their fandom. But yes, you're right. There's been a lot of that this year, but it's not new. So I'm not saying that we should ignore it, but I'm kind of weird on the fence with it, because on the one hand, you do like people like that, the guy that you're talking about on that YouTube thing, you want to call attention to him. You want to tell people to ignore him. But the more you tell people about that, he gets more followers.
I have a different position on that. Because the thing is,
say his name or anything.
Right. No, I will say his name in a second. But here's why. Here's my position on it. I'm not telling people not to watch the man's videos. People can watch him in the millions. That's not the point to me. My position is, if he goes on a rant, or if he voices his position and says, "I hope Doctor Who gets canceled," and then Doctor Who gets canceled, I'm not going to come at him and be like,
"It's because
you got
of you.
Doctor Who canceled." Yeah. I would never say that. However,
there are people who will.
However, I will say, if you go and repeatedly say a journalist's name and then accuse them of shilling or lying or being on the take, and then that person gets attacked, I will blame you for that. You can absorb. And so, in light of that, Gary Beekler, please stop doing that. With respect, I say your name to call out this one behavior. Everything else is fine. I have no problem with you hating Doctor Who, hating Star Trek, hating Star Wars now. Man, go nuts. But this thing, anybody that does that shouldn't. And I don't think anybody should hurt Gary. I just think Gary should stop doing this, because it could hurt people. That's it. That is all I'm going to say on the subject. I'm really bummed that Doctor Who is not going to be around. That's a thing. That's a problem.
You know, until 2020, that's the problem.
Well, and that's a real shame,
that's
too.
That's a mistake.
Because especially
that is a huge mistake.
Coming out of this episode, I saw so many people writing about it, both in reviews and out, saying this felt like a season finale, you know? And to go from... I feel like it... There's a certain amount of momentum coming out of this episode that we now have to sit on for a year, which is just a shame.
It is.
And that's the thing, Doctor Who could get canceled. And I'll tell you why. We're living in a time where every day a new show gets announced of this type. You know, Doctor Who can be replaced. You know,
I don't think Doctor Who can be replaced, but honestly,
out of sight, out of mind, a whole year of no episodes, that's a long ass time. If you're telling me that the show couldn't start to fall into... I'm not saying that that's definitely going to happen, but I am saying that I do think that they really are rolling the dice. Yeah. I do believe that whoever's decision that was to say a whole year with new episodes, it is my personal opinion that that is a mistake. But that's, you know what I mean? Like, right. Again, that's just my personal opinion based on what I know of the industry. Anyway, I hope that there will be more. I like that the Daleks came back. I like Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about this stuff, friends.
And Jodie Whittaker got her big "I'm the Doctor" line.
Oh, yeah.
Ring the bells. That was my favorite part.
Good times. Quick little slide. When I dip, you dip, we dip.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, thank you for listening to this podcast. Please subscribe to it if you haven't. Check out all the other podcasts in our podcast family. There's a metric ass ton of them now, and they're all pretty good. Battlestar Galactica's Phantom Files, strong female characters. We've got Mike and Tara's podcasts, which I should just write down what the names of them are. One's Behind the Panel, and the other one is Project Blue Book. Are coming soon.
We also are going to have a daily class episodic podcast.
Oh, that's right. I just heard about that the other day. I was having a conversation with somebody at the place where that's going to be recorded.
Yep. And folks behind the show will be on it, so we'll have access to all the talent. It's going to be great, so you should definitely check that out.
Cool. And then, yes, if you have Amazon Alexa, please feel free to check out the Alexa skill. There's some episodes of different shows that we've got on that, too, that are specific to that platform. Before we wrap up, friends of mine, where can folks find you on the internet?
You can find me, Karima, the Blurred Girl, T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L, all over the interwebs, but I'm mostly on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me, Adam Swiderski, on Instagram at RockTheFaces.
My name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one M. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.